Tom Morris has been good enough to join me from Fox Footy. Welcome to you, Tom. Great to have you on.
Dwayne, great to chat.
You can read Tom's work at foxsports.com.au. You can catch him on AFL Tonight from 7 p.m. live on Fox Footy 504. And you've written a couple of Collingwood stories in recent times. It's been firing up the text and the phone lines have been lining up. Been a lot of Collingwood talk. Firstly, how did you find out about Darcy Moore's Achilles? And is that something that we should have known of? Why did we not know about that?
I'm not sure why none of us knew. I guess the club hasn't announced it. I can't tell you how I found out about it, but it's I heard Tim Watson on the radio on SEN this morning saying that that he was meant to do an interview for Channel 7 with Darcy Moore last Thursday, and Darcy Moore had to pull out due to injury because he didn't want to stand up for an extended period of time. So that sort of goes hand in hand with the story. Look, Darcy Moore could keep playing with his Achilles. It's Achilles tendon soreness, but the reality is if he plays the rest of the year, it's going to be arduous for him because he is in some pain and he was in some serious discomfort on the weekend against GWS. I mean, the second option is that he goes in for surgery, which means he's out for the rest of the year. Right. It's not ideal. Probably the most likely option for Collingwood at some stage in the near future is that he has a few weeks off to try to get the inflammation down and rest and then comes back. And if that doesn't work, then he might have to have surgery. But this has been a persistent problem all summer. And it's continued on, and it's meant he's been on light training duties. I must emphasise that the club hasn't confirmed it publicly, but it is true. He's had Achilles soreness, and he's just been managing it. He's keen to keep playing, but it's one of those injuries you don't really want to aggravate too much, or it could become it becomes impossible to play.
You've written a few Collingwood stories in the last few days. You also wrote an in-depth piece about what's happening behind closed doors. Collingwood, is player unrest a wrong quote? You mentioned something similar to that.
Yeah, player unrest is a broad quote. You're right. I mean, whenever a team is not playing as well as they would like, there's always a degree of player unrest, and that is no different at Collingwood. The difference at Collingwood, though, is that there's a view among some players that Nathan Buckley has sort of regressed to what he was pre-2018 when he really made a concerted effort to improve his coaching, improve his emotional connection to the players in 2018 and 2019. And this has partly been brought on by the hub and how difficult that time was. Also partly brought on by stress, by the fact that it's 2021 and the club isn't performing as well. And also what's really important to understand about Collingwood and inside those four walls at the Holden Centre is the erosion of trust that has existed ever since the trade period should not be underestimated. It's very hard for Nathan Buckley or any other senior person at that football club, apart from Graham Wright, because he just arrived, to promote or, I guess, endeavour to have a really deep level of trust and emotional responsibility to one another when they dumped Adam Treloar in the most unceremonious fashion and did similar things to Jaden Stevenson and Tom Phillips, I guess, on lesser levels. So there is a divide there. There's a struggle from the players. Not all players, but some players feel like Buckley isn't the coach that he has been at his best in 2018 and 2019. And I must stress as well, this is not Scott Pendlebury. Pendlebury is a Buckley man through and through. Everyone tells me, and I've spoken to a lot of people in and around the club, that Scott Pendlebury will stick by Nathan Buckley to the very end. This just comes from slightly below that. And that is in somewhat normal when clubs are struggling, but it's also a bit of a concern because Buckley's out of contract, they're not winning games, and it has the potential to blow up.
So where do you think it goes next then? Collingwood start to win games, then all that becomes white noise, if you like, and they can say, well, that was last summer's story and we've decided to, you know, make change and we've changed the game style, we've changed the game plan, we're winning games and we're back on track. But do you think it's going to go the other way? Are you worried that it's going to continue to be a bit of a downward spiral instead?
Yeah. I'm worried it's going to fester. I don't think Collingwood's going to finish 17th or 18th and win four or five games. Like, I still think
they'll finish 11th?
Yeah, I think 11th is trouble for Nathan Buckley. But it's not entirely unpredictable what's happened, is it, Dwayne?
No.
I mean, they've lost three of their best 22. They've bought in draft picks. They knew they were going to go backwards this year. The eternal question for Collingwood was whether Nathan Buckley could absorb more losses and still keep his job. And there is also a view at Collingwood that is held by people I've spoken to that Nathan Buckley is more likely to resign than he is to get sacked. Nathan Buckley said that himself, in fairness as well. So he's acutely aware of where things are at, but it's a very difficult position. And there's no doubt that winning makes things better. But I think in this case, winning will just paper over the cracks and there'll always be an undercurrent of unrest and dissatisfaction with the way things have transpired the last 6 to 8 months.
So it's one thing to change coaches. It's another thing to find who's the guy to replace him. Who would be the guy to replace him if they did want to find a new coach?
Well, I mean, that's looking a long way ahead. But someone like a Ross Lyon is always going to be in the mix if a vacancy comes up. Someone like an Alistair Clarkson, even though he's been categoric in his want to stay at Hawthorn, given he's out of contract in 18 months' time, his name will come up as well. But I think it would be premature to assume that Nathan Buckley is going to go, but that's certainly reading the tea leaves the way it looks at the moment if things continue to go the way they are.
Now, you've picked up on a stat trend as well that's changed this year. What have you got for us?
This is, for us footy nerds, Dwayne, I find this very interesting. So this is with the help of Jacob Wilson from Champion Data. And I was just very interested to see how the new kick-out rule has changed the way the game's played as the AFL wanted it to. So the man of the market kickouts for the last period of time has been 10 metres away from the square. Now they're 15 metres back, which obviously allows the player who's kicking in to run further up the field and move the ball forward further. Some teams are using it very well. The Sydney Swans are the best at it, getting the ball from their kickouts to forward 50. Jake Lloyd is the best exponent of that. Jake Lloyd has played on 100% of his kickouts. I think he's kicked out 26 or 27 times this year. So it shows that Sydney's tactics is clearly to get the ball further up the field. On the other side of the coin, Richmond has really struggled. Richmond has yet to score from any of their kickouts. So they're struggling with that ball moving up the field. Collingwood has had 44 kickouts and scored just two behind. So they're struggling with their ball movement up the field. And then you look at the players as well. There's a player, Jordan Ridley for Essendon. He's had 41 kickouts and played on 36 times out of 41. And the next question is, should those 36 kickouts that he's played on be counted as stats? Because that heavily influences the way that all Australian selections are done and that sort of thing. And Lee Montagna's view is no, there should be a little asterisk next to if you play on. But broadly speaking, you are 6% more likely to get the ball inside your forward 50 from a kick out than what you were any time in the past decade. And that is a big tick for the AFL.
Yeah, it's nice that the game has changed in that way. And you've also been casting your eye over cricket. There's a bit of a cricket terminology change happening before our eyes as well. What do you make of this new commentary regime?
It's amazing that when the 100 was announced, Dwayne, a couple of years ago, obviously it didn't happen last year because of COVID, but when it was announced, people threw their arms in the air. How can you have 100 ball innings? How can you have 5 ball overs? What's going on? This is going to be just ridiculous. This is not cricket. This is just entertainment. But now that the English Cricket Board has announced that wickets won't be referred to as wickets, they'll be referred to as outs, people have thrown their hands in the air again. This is ridiculous. It's just not cricket. My view is that T20 cricket, in the way we know it now, with franchise cricket and the 100 that's coming in, has never been legitimate cricket. We need to get away from the fact that, it's not cricket, it's not traditional. This is pure entertainment. So if we have a mechanism that allows new fans to come to the game, as their data research has shown in England, then just do it. It doesn't mean we're going to affect test cricket. It doesn't mean we're going to affect one-day cricket. But I don't know why people get so frustrated with whether we're going to call it wickets or outs in a competition that is not really based around proper cricket. It's just based around entertainment and bring new fans to the game. So it's going to be interesting to watch on Fox Cricket. It's going to be unique.
Did you just say it wasn't legitimate cricket?
It's not legitimate cricket, Dwayne. It's pure entertainment. That's the way we should be thinking of franchise T20 cricket and the 100. All these gimmicks that come in, they're in for our entertainment. They're not in to preserve the natural order of cricket. And I think once we get our heads around that, we can understand that we can keep test cricket at bay and treat this for what it is. And this is no different to going to the movies. This is no different to going to a physical hobby of some sort. This is just pure entertainment. And that's the way that the cricket boards want it to be, because that's where the money is.
So a T20 game between Australia and England is legitimate cricket, but if it's a T20 franchise that's playing, then it's not legitimate. It's entertainment, and we shouldn't actually put it in the same bracket.
Yeah, because look at all the gimmicks in the franchise leagues. You can't argue that if you have subs and timeouts and now you call wickets outs, that it's legitimate cricket. This has gone too far the other way for the traditionalist. But I'm keeping an open mind, and I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, it's just that some players earn more in that, that franchise right. T20 cricket than they do in the other cricket where they're wearing a baggy green. So, yeah, it's an interesting space we're in this world. Tom, great to have a chat to you. You can read more of Tom's work at foxsports.com.au. You can catch him on AFL Tonight from 7 p.m. live on Fox Footy 504 this evening. And I'll see you in the office on the weekend, Tom. Thanks for your time.
Dwayne, look forward to it. Have a great day.
Tom Morris from Fox Footy. AFL Tonight live from 7 p.m. on Fox.